and welcome to the talk Software Accessibility Without a Fuss by Casey. Casey is an accessibility consultant and will talk to you about the basics of digital accessibility for developers. For those of you who need a German translation, there will be a German translation available. You can listen to the audio stream on audio c3lingo.org. Please give a warm welcome to Casey.
Hello, everyone. Thank you for showing up in this high count. In my talk, Software Accessibility Without the Fuzz, I'm going to teach you how software accessibility works, how it's done, and what you as developers can do to make your software more accessible. This is not going to be a talk where you will learn anything, but you will learn where to learn and what to learn for the most part. So within the next 15 to 20 minutes, I hope you will get a good understanding of what accessibility actually means, what you have to do, and what you can do. Okay, now the first thing I want to talk about is that accessibility is hard. There are a lot of people online who say, oh, accessibility, it's so simple. You have to do practically nothing. No, that's not true. That's a blatant lie. Accessibility is hard. And that's also why there are countless professionals in this field who are dedicated to it, who know a lot about this stuff. And most people who are in this field are also developers. So they have their development knowledge, they have additional accessibility knowledge, most of the time at least. Okay, so what are we going to do about this problem? We have something hard and we need to approach it. Let's break it down into, let's say, a five-step plan. It sounds good, right? Okay. Step one will be we need to understand what accessibility actually means and what it means for us developers. Including people with disabilities is probably something that all of you want to do when you are here in this talk. So let's break it down even further. It means that we want to make software as usable for everyone as possible and also independently. And that should go regardless of a disability or the availability of assistance. So people should be able to use a software on their very own terms. And that is the goal that we want to achieve with digital accessibility. And all of that should be possible without any problems or any hurdles. And of course, also that means that it is deeply connected to some user experience disciplines. So if you have experience in that, then most of what you know will be somehow applicable to accessibility work. And what you should also know is that people interact with computers with different terms and with different means for the most part. Now, for each of these steps, I'm going to give you a simple task that you can do directly with your software. This is going to take a bit of time, so make sure you plan that, but these steps and these tasks are generally pretty easy and pretty approachable. The task for this step would be check which interfaces your software has available, how people can possibly right now interact with your software that you have written, and also check who the audience for your software is. Is it techies? Is it hints and kunz? Basically everyone. This makes a huge difference in what a software should be capable of, what a software actually does, and how a software should be structured. And also what you have to pay very close attention to is that people with disabilities can be found in all of these modalities. So there can be very technically skilled people with disabilities. Or, for example, when you're developing a car website, do not have the expectation that blind people, for example, will never buy a car. That is simply not true, because that will happen in the real world. Let's go over to step two. Let's understand what assistive tech does and how it works. Now, assistive tech is technology and software that people use to interact with their computers, that change how they interact, that change how things might look. And it helps them interacting with these digital interfaces that you are providing as developers. And they can be used to any extent and in any combination with one another. So maybe you see one person using a screen reader, for example, which is something that blind people use, and color enhancements, which is something that normally low vision people use, in combination with one another. This will absolutely happen, and most people will do something like that. So do not expect that people will use only one assistive technology at a time. Mostly they use a combination of a lot of these. And assistive technology generally is highly configurable. That does not mean that everyone configures their assistive tech to the fullest extent and that everything is different, but it will mean that you cannot rely on certain standards being met with given software. So what you should, or what you have to do, is work on these things to be compatible with one another. Now, there is a lot of assistive technology out there. This is an incomplete list of everything that came to my mind when making this talk. And as you can see, it's a lot. Now, what most people would do is order these by disabilities. For example, for totally blind people, for visually impaired people, we have them in the middle. These are mostly visual accommodations. We have assistive tech for motor impaired people. You can see that there's a lot of variety out there. We have something for hearing impaired people, and we also have something for learning impaired people. So there's a lot of that for everyone, and catering to all of these might seem difficult. So I'm going to do something that most people do not actually think about when they see this huge list of assistive technology. We are going to reorder these by how they work under the hood. And as you can see, some of the things the motor impaired people use have moved over to the side where the things that blind people were before. And that is because interacting with assistive technology, interacting with interfaces through this assistive technology, is generally very much the same. And they all follow very similar patterns. So if you say something works for a screen reader, it will most likely also work for all of the other means that are there for people to use. And all of these things come with their own little downsides. For example, screen readers and most of this motor-impaired assistive tech only allows for linear navigation. You cannot do multiple things at once, and you are unable to actually skim anything, and you have to go through through interface elements one by one. And in order to make it easier for people to navigate, you're going to need especially some anchor points. You might have heard that people with screen readers might navigate by headlines or by sections that you can set in your program. And that is generally very much preferred for motor-impaired people as well. And there are a lot of other challenges. Like, your software will look different when people use some visual aids, or their interaction can be a lot slower when they have a given disability. And for, especially for hearing impaired people, any information that you deliver through audio cannot really be translated to text one by one, so information there will definitely get lost, and you will have to have that in mind. Now, the second task is test whether your software is usable under all of these conditions with a keyboard only. And also check whether elements that you can navigate by keyboard are also in the correct order. And then you can already make adjustments to this. This should be fairly easy and fairly straightforward if you already are familiar with what your frameworks provide. Step three, get to know the four principles of digital accessibility. These are taken right out of the standard, the almighty WCAG. You might have all heard of that. We call it WCAG in the industry. It's generally very, very daunting, but don't be scared of that. You're not going to need it very much. Right. The principles are that your software should be perceivable, that it should be operable, that it should be understandable, and that it must be robust. Now, what do these mean? Perceivable, it means that your software and everything you do should be available in at least two modalities. So if you have something shown visually in an image, you should also have it as a text. That could be an alternative text. You might have already heard of that when you're on social media, for example. Or if you have an audio, you should also provide visuals together with that. So people have two ways of, you know, noticing something. And that also goes, for example, color coding buttons and stuff. Excuse me. Okay. Also, make sure that form follows function. Buttons must look like buttons. Checkbox should absolutely look like checkboxes. That is something that many designers most of the time do not do, and that many developers do not think about this. And that also extends to, for example, when you're developing for the web, what I see very often is that people will make buttons as div elements, which will take away all of their functionality and their keyboard accessibility, for example, which you will then have to code in later. You don't want that. You just want to use what is already there, and everything should look as what people expect. Operable means that it should be compatible with all assistive technology. That is going to be a very hard requirement, but as you have seen, most of these assistive technologies work about the same under the hood, and they only offer like different means of inputs for the user. It should also follow standards and expectations. For example, users should be able to navigate drop-down menus with their keyboard because that is something that they already know from their operating system. And that is also very often not addressed and not implemented correctly. Also, you should expect that your users might take a lot longer to complete any actions that you provide. So when you're making games, add an accessible mode where people can take their own time, for example, quick time actions. That will make it much, much easier and much more enjoyable for them. It might make it also simpler for other people, but who are you to judge, basically? Everything should be done on the user's terms. And as a key takeaway for this, never roll your own components. Like with cryptography, it will go wrong. Just use what is already there. Use the defaults. Use, for example, what the web provides and what your GUI framework provides. Understandable means that everything is clear and easy to understand. I think that's pretty self-explanatory. What will also happen a lot is that your users will make mistakes, that they will input data incorrectly, for example, and such failures must be communicated in a very easy to understand way so people can correct their mistakes. And also, you should guide them towards a correct solution, if anything, so it will be the easiest for them to correct anything. And it should also be robust. That means that it should be compatible with anything now and also in the future, for example, or with any combination of these tools. It should not suddenly fall apart. For example, screen reader compatibility and keyboard usage shouldn't fall apart when the text size is increased and then everything happens off the screen. This must happen, and it's very important that you check this with combinations of stuff. Following standards and conventions is essential to achieve this. But if you're not butchering stuff and if you're not hacking together stuff quickly, then this should also be fairly easy to achieve. Now, the task for this step should be check superficially whether your software fulfills the criteria of these four purposes that we have just seen. And you can also check out WCAG if you want. You don't have to. And get familiarity with the guidelines. They are very complex, and they're not easy. I'm going to say that before, so you know what you get yourself into. But if you want to develop any further knowledge, if you want to see anything for yourself, this is the place to go, and there is nothing else that is as good as this standard. And now, when you have done that, you can also already make adjustments that you seem or that you think fulfill these principles. And you will get better with them as you go. Now, step four, implementing it. You've all waited for this. This is usually something that people start their accessibility journey with. They do something that might not be good. what you have to do is familiarize yourself with the documentation of your GUI framework. So everything that you use, for example, on the web, you might use React or Angular, they all have documentation. Maybe GTK or Qt, they have documentation as well. And if you use, or if you notice that you use anything that is not standard and that is not widely adopted, maybe don't use it. Alternatives are widely available. That is especially true, for example, for the Rust ecosystem. There are some GUI libraries there that are fairly new. They all work with a software called AccessKit. That is not accessible to a level where one could say, or one could easily, you know, rely on that being true and being workable for everyone on every operating system that the software compiles for. So we're going to have to wait for that to be implemented correctly in the future, but right now we're not there yet. So now is the time for WCAG. As I already said, it can be daunting and overwhelming. It's a lot of stuff, and consume it slowly. You don't have to read it all one by one right now. You don't have to ever read it completely. You don't have to remember anything that stands there, but after you've written it, you will know where to find something when you encounter something during development. WCAG is a really good standard, actually, and it leaves some room for improvement and also for interpretation, but that is a very good thing. So there is not, a very fixed way to do things. And also, last but not least, you will need to be able to use some assistive technology. Something that is generally available and what people mostly use is a screen reader. So that could be NVDA on Windows or VoiceOver on macOS. There is nothing, unfortunately, that I can recommend for Linux usage, but that shouldn't matter much now. Okay, the task for this step should be, you should test your software with complex assistive technology like a screen reader or some of these mobility aids that we have discussed before, and you should see whether that works. You don't have to have the full experience for this, but it's best if you have a disabled user guide you and teach you this assistive tech beforehand. So you will probably get lost on your first time that you're doing it. So what you can always do is check out YouTube tutorials, for example. There are some available for screen readers, and that is generally very helpful. That show you gestures, that show you keyboard shortcuts. There is a lot to learn and a lot to know, which you absolutely have to know if you want to make software accessible. And as I already said, you don't have to target all WCAG criteria. That just doesn't matter at this stage that you are working on. Work with it, get better with it gradually, and you will get there eventually. And step five, which is the last step of the plan, you need to talk about it. Tell people that you are working on accessibility and give it a prominent spot in your project. Just make it visible to people that you care for accessibility, that there are means to contact you, and people will be very happy to give you feedback on what you're doing and help you get better with it. People are very, very nice, especially in this area, because most software, unfortunately, isn't accessible. Also, let your users know how they can reach you. And that is the concluding task for this. Write an accessibility statement where you let your people know about this. Let them know about the barriers that you have already found and when you are going to fix them. Let the users know how they can reach you, and just talk to your users about accessibility. If you want some good examples for that, some iOS apps, for example, have an accessibility section in their App Store listings where they talk about what they're doing. This is generally pretty great, and you should all do that too for your applications and on any way you distribute them. Now, let's cap it up. It's hard. I know this has been a lot. You are probably not any smarter now. You just know that there is a lot to learn. Yes, that is to be expected, but you will get better at it eventually. It is also a lot. There is a lot to read. Don't be scared of it. And if you have the resources, get professional consulting. They will help you get on track. They will help you understand what you need to do. They will help you prioritize anything. That's why there is a profession for this. You as developers, you know, you can only do so much. You have only limited time and resources, and you also want to get done with other things, but you also want to do your best work with digital accessibility. So if you have the resources, just hire some people, or maybe you can make a career out of it yourself, especially with the European Accessibility Act that is coming into effect next year. There is going to be, and there already is, huge demand for it. So it would be very nice to welcome you in this field. Okay, and as the last point, do not hire testing agencies without prior consulting. They will just return you a checklist of things you did and did not do, and they will probably not tell you what you can do better, or stuff will be very hard to understand. And that is something that most people do. They just see, oh, Deutsche Telekom, for example, is offering testing services, auditing services. Let's buy them. They must be good. Then they do that, and most of the time, that does not help anything, and they get additional consulting afterwards that helps them understand these things. So you should first get the consulting and then figure out whether you need the tests or not. Okay, let's go. That's about it. You can follow me on social media, and thank you so much for showing up here.
Thank you much. Thank you very much for this talk. Unfortunately, we don't have any time left for Q&A. Thank you all for coming, and please give another warm round of applause for Casey.